I used to be so afraid to say it out loud, but my friend Jamie said to me the other day, like, share your optimism. I just really feel right now I'm in this shift. Things are happening and I'm allowing them to happen and I'm happy to share it. I really feel like I'm entering into a new chapter of my life.
Welcome to No Limits. I'm Rebecca Jarvis. Each week, we're talking to women playing at the top of their game. So how are they doing it? Whether you're looking for answers or you just want to hear a good story, you're in the right place. Jamie Lynn Sigler, welcome to No Limits.
Thank you so much.
I'm really excited to have you here. I'm going to tell a really quick story that you will not remember, but it did make an impact on me. So when I was a kid and you were a kid, Teen People had this award ceremony for 20 teens who will change the world. And I was one of the kids in the group. And I remember you were there as like a celebrity to just say, you know, welcome. I'm sure you did this kind of stuff all the time. And I still remember calling all of my friends in Minneapolis saying, you guys, I just saw Jamie Lynn Sigler.
No way.
Like, yeah. So you made this girl from Minnesota very, very
That's
happy.
That's so sweet. I never, ever thought of myself as ever the girl that somebody would call their friends and say they met me. So that's cool to hear.
Well, I think you absolutely are that person. And I think you're also a person, just given how much vulnerability you've shared over the years, you're somebody that a lot of young women have really connected to because you've talked about your own battles. Mm-hmm. And you've opened up in ways that, you know, when you came out and talked about your eating disorder, for example, no one had really been vocal about these things at that time.
I guess now that I think about it, yeah. But, you know, in very many ways, I think in sharing my vulnerability, like you say, it always came at times where I didn't feel like I had a choice any longer. It felt like the healing thing for me to do was to share. Because, you know, battling on your own is too hard. It's making it harder. And so I found that, you know, having the platform to share and bring awareness is wonderful, but it really was doing a lot more for me in that moment and at that time than I ever even realized it could.
I can imagine growing up as a child actor. And you started really young, right? You were performing in plays.
Mm-hmm.
The Sopranos came along when you were
16.
16.
Yeah, but I had been acting since I was like 8 or 9. Yeah.
Grew up in Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
Did you always want to be an actor? And did you even have a sense, were your parents tuned into this idea of how public the whole thing would ultimately be?
No, I had all the big dreams and aspirations as any, you know, kid that wants to be an actor has, but I never thought it would really ever happen. I was hoping that I would be on Broadway one day, but I never thought I would be in TV or film or anything. And even when Sopranos happened and it was happening, the only time that it felt like, oh, this is a big thing is when they would fly us out to LA for the award shows. Other than that, I mean, we shot in New York. It was in a different time. The internet wasn't what it was. There was no social media. So we lived very normal lives. Like we did our job and we went home. So I really never felt like my life was that different. I was just getting to do what I really loved with amazing people.
Were there any big surprises to you? The things that you didn't expect from all of it?
Well, I think it's, well, especially when the show first started, I mean, I was just a teenager and going through a lot, going through coming out of an eating disorder and sort of coming into my own and doing that on camera, was hard because I remember like HBO had a website and they had these message boards, you know, for the Sopranos and all these people. And I thought it was so cool. That was such a new thing to happen. And I remember signing on Meadow's page and it was just people just bashing me and my weight and my weight fluctuation. And so I think that was the biggest shock, was learning how to deal with like intense criticism from people that I didn't know at all. And you know, dealing with having people sort of comment on something that I was dealing with personally and not commenting on my acting, but really of my physical appearance. It was a rough lesson to learn, but I'm sort of grateful that it happened as early as it did, because I think it sort of set me up for later in life of really not sweating that type of stuff anymore.
That's such an interesting point, especially because now I mean, that stuff can come at you 24/7, and people have a million opinions, and most of them are, well, a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot right. of them are really nasty.
Yes, yes. And I'm way better at muting all of that than I think I would have been had I not gone through that when I was like 18.
So after The Sopranos, you are now looking at different acting gigs. How are you seeing your life in that moment?
Well, I was nervous, but I was sort of looking to make big changes everywhere in my life. So I decided to make the move to LA. And in between that, I went on something called Birthright to Israel, where if you're of Jewish...
I did that
you
too.
Did?
Yeah.
That's awesome. So I signed up as Jamie Sigler online with one of my best friends and went when I was 26 and had the greatest time. And then that was sort of like the bookend.
Did
of like,
everybody know you as Meadow? Was everyone?
You know, nobody said anything to me, which I really appreciated. So I just assumed they didn't know who I was. But as the trip went on, like people started to talk to me about it. And then Birthright caught on. And then they asked if a camera crew could come follow us for a day. And as I checked with everyone first, I was like, are you guys cool with this? And everyone seemed super excited about it.
Dream come true.
Yeah. And honestly, I was so happy to promote what they do with Birthright. It's such a wonderful, amazing experience for young people to have. So that was really cool. And so that was sort of like the bookend for me. And it's sort of like this great emotional, spiritual trip that I took. The end of Sopranos, moved to LA. And I was sort of dealing a little bit with that double-edged sword of when you're on something so iconic like The Sopranos that people really just associate you with that. And it's hard for them to see you as anything else. And it's crazy because you're talking about creatives that are having a hard time seeing you past a role that they know you from. And so Entourage came along and it was supposed to be a one-off cameo, and he's, you know, Doug Ellen and I had talked over the years, but when I was on Sopranos, I wasn't allowed to do Entourage. So now that it was done, he said, look, I have this cool idea with you and Turtle. It's completely out of the box. It's nothing like who you really are. Just have some fun. I was so excited. I was a fan of the show. And then it turned into a year and a half gig. And it, in hindsight, it was so perfect because it was the medium and the channel everybody knew me from. And I was playing myself. There was references to The Sopranos, but it was obviously an exaggerated version. And it was sort of like this easy transition for me to sort of step away from Meadow and be something a little different. So I'm super grateful to that experience for so many reasons. But professionally, that it just sort of allowed people to look beyond Meadow.
Since then, you've done CSI. Cyber, CSI yeah. Cyber, Freeform's Baby Daddy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was that fun?
It was so much fun. You know, I did a whole season of this show on NBC called Guys with Kids, which was in front of a live audience. And that whole year of my life was so fun because it sort of incorporated the theater aspect that I love so much. And so getting to do comedy and something light and fun and different, it's really allowed me to really feel like I'm playing a lot. But also in the past couple years, I've had a little boy, and so motherhood has completely changed my appreciation for work, but also wanting to take time to really be present for my son, but also take care of myself, because I am dealing with a chronic illness that takes a lot of time and care that normal people that are, you know, grinding to get work all the time don't have to deal with. So I have to take the time that I need to take sometimes, and so I'm very fortunate that when I am feeling good and ready to work, that the work is there.
So 15 years ago, it was that you were diagnosed with MS. The Sopranos at that point, you were still in the middle of all of it.
Yeah, it was the fourth season of Sopranos I was diagnosed.
When you were diagnosed, what did you think?
You know, I think I was in shock. And I remember hearing the news, trying to understand, and then not asking any more questions. I didn't want to know any more about it. I wanted to live in denial. I didn't feel sick. It was like a very quick sort of onset of symptoms, and then they went away. And I went symptom free for quite some time. So I, in hindsight, was living carelessly and wasn't being the best patient. And I don't know if life would be different for me now if I was taking care of it properly when I was first diagnosed, but it was hard. You know, I was 20 years old and I had a lot of life ahead of me, and I was starring on Broadway at the time, and I was doing everything I wanted to do, and I didn't want to accept that I had something that could possibly take all my dreams away. And during that time, I confided in a couple of people, and we all felt as a group that it was probably best if I just didn't share this news with anybody, which I think maybe at the time was the right move. I think it gave me later in life, when the symptoms started to come up, more of a fighting attitude than maybe I wouldn't have had, because I was fighting so hard to hide it and suppress mm-hmm. it and beat it. But then, you know, it got to a point over the last couple of years where it was doing more damage than anything of keeping it a secret, because you start to feel these feelings of shame and guilt. I was embarrassed, and I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't do anything to deserve it. And I had gone through such an emotional journey with the MS, aside from all the physical stuff, that I really realized, like, the only way that I'm going to be able to heal as a person, not even just my disease, is to just live my truth at this point. I can't feel like, you know, that I have this curse on me and that I have to hide this from everybody. And also, when I had my son, I never wanted to get to a point where he was going to have to keep that secret from me either. And I wanted to mm-hmm. be an example for him. I wanted, you know, the things that I'm teaching him and wanting to instill in him is that you can do anything and follow your dreams, and you deserve always an opportunity. I wasn't applying that to myself. And so I needed to give myself that chance too.
What really was the pivotal moment that helped you come around to that mentality?
Well, friends and family were trying to, I think, convince me for quite some time.
What was your argument to them of why you couldn't share?
No one will hire me. And then if I really talk about it, then it's really real. I used to have these big dreams that one day I would talk about it when I was better, or when it wasn't an issue anymore. Like, and then I would say, oh, I dealt with this. And I don't know why I thought that was going to be more impactful than actually talking about it while I'm living with the disease for people that are struggling with it every day. It's I'm able to sort of be a voice for people that are suffering in silence. And the MS community has given me just as much as they say I've given them, because, like I said, I think really more than anything, I'm trying to focus more on what this disease has given me than what it's actually taken away. And it's given me and a lot of peace, and it's actually led me down a path of emotional healing and wellness that I wouldn't have really probably ever cared about or really focused on if had I not had it.
You would have just been living in the craziness of,
yeah,
let's keep climbing the ladder, the Hollywood ladder, and do another thing and do another performance.
Exactly. And it's really just given me a greater appreciation of everything and taught me how to sort of slow down and take care of myself and rest and relaxation, which I think is important for Americans in general, which is why I teamed up with CERTA for this Declare Peace campaign, because right now Americans are at a record level of stress and discomfort. And I know for myself, as being a mom that's balancing career and family and a disease, you know, whether it's 15 minutes or a good night's sleep, I need that time for myself. And so if you go to declarepeace.com, you can find tips from me on how to find that peaceful moments for yourself, or from the CERTA team. But I think that we need to start reminding ourselves to take better care of ourselves. You know, I think there's only so many hours in the day, and we want to take care of everything we need to take care of, but we suffer after a while. And so, you know, I've been given a great reminder of how to do that, and so I'm happy to share my tips with people.
Absolutely. What's one of your tips? Give us a little taste of your tips to de-stress.
So for me, especially as a mom, I like everything clean and put away before I get in bed, just so that I know when I wake up.
You're not surveying the room thinking there's all this stuff I have to deal with.
Exactly. So, you know, bottles are washed, dishes are in the washer. You know, it just feels, toys are put away. It just feels better to go to bed and just know that you're going to wake up in more of a peaceful.
Is your house spotless?
I'm a little crazy about it. Yes. If you can tell, yes. But we just actually moved to a new home, and my bedroom is my favorite room in my home. And it was really important for me. I have like tons of pillows and big blankets and lots of whites and blues and candles. It's and crystals. Like it's very important for me when I get in my room to be able to put aside all the pain and things that I feel during the day and just really decompress and relax. And whether that means my son is in my bed with me or I'm by myself, I really think it makes a difference in my life and my physical, emotional well-being.
I completely agree with that. I actually, it's funny, you moved, I moved recently, and I focused on the bedroom, and it does change things.
It does.
It really does. If you have like a comfortable bed and you have the setup that's clean and you're not just filled with chaos. I mean, I'm a person, if you came to my apartment, it's not spotless, but it is clean. But I was one of those like piles of things to get to kind of person, mm-hmm. you know, like the piles of paperwork. That doesn't work. When you know it's there, it's in the back of your head when you're trying to go to sleep at night.
Absolutely. Or it's like when you move and there's always those last three boxes.
Yes. You're
like, I'll get to them. Those boxes stood there for about 2 months. And finally I was like, all right, I'll unpack the office desk, whatever that I didn't need for a minute.
So as you look out at your life, some of these things, you know, they've happened and everything happens for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
When you look out at your future, what are some of your goals? What are some of the things you would love to do next?
I would love to expand my family.
That's exciting.
Yes. I would love to continue working, continue doing roles that challenge me. You know, I'm starting a movie next week, and I'm playing this 1920s flapper. And when I got the script, I said to the director, you know, are you sure you want me? Because I'm really limited in what I can do as a dancer and movement and high heels and things. I might not be the best choice for it. And he said, you know, Jamie, I just really feel like emotionally you can bring what I need to this girl and I'll figure it out. And so the fact that there's, you know, been people that have given me that chance since coming forward with my MS, I think will continue. And that's what I'm hopeful for. So hopefully to continue working. And eventually, I don't know, I think I would love to get to a place where I really feel like I've put in my time and research with this business to start producing.
Mm.
I don't know about directing, but
What kind of projects would you want to produce?
I think film, because I just love the idea of telling a story that can move somebody that's complete and something that somebody can go back to whenever they need it. Impactful stories about powerful women overcoming. I think for so many years, I've always felt like a victim. And I don't feel that way anymore. And so I want to tell more stories of women that are overcoming. And whether that's me playing them or me producing it, it's something I aspire to do, definitely, for sure.
When your kids are older, I will definitely watch those stories.
Thank you.
We don't have enough of those stories.
Agreed.
Out there. So bravo for you and your interest. How do you compare stage performing versus TV versus film? Do you have a preference?
Yes, stage performing.
Is that because the energy in the crowd?
It's energy in the crowd. And I don't know. I just feel like it's so much easier for me to step into a role when I'm on the stage in the costumes. It's just you can't step out of the energy. It's just it's there the entire length of the play or the musical or whatever you're performing. And when you're filming stuff, you know, there's cuts and there's this and there's distractions and there's people. I think that's much more difficult to me. So whenever I'm doing things on film or television, I'm try to approach it like a play, but that's also where my training's from. I mean, I grew up only doing musical theater until Sopranos was my first time ever on a set or in front of a camera. So that's really where my heart lies too.
Young person comes to you and says, Jamie, I want to get into this business. What's your advice to them? What do they need to do?
I'd say go to as many plays as you can, watch as many movies as you can, read as many books, go into as many acting classes, just the more experience you can get. I don't have any tips on like call this person or call this agency, because things freakishly happen for me. And I think that that's how it kind of will happen for everyone. But I think the more that you're just around the energy of the business and acting, and every play you see, every movie you watch, every performance you study is just going to continue to fuel you, there's more than one way to skin a cat. So you've just got to figure out what works for you. And I think that comes from research.
And to that point about what works for you, the longer that you run away from whatever it is that you are, whoever it is that you are, I hear this a lot from actors, but also from entrepreneurs. It's when they fully embrace whoever it is that they are, that things just start to work.
Yeah.
That things just start to fire on all cylinders.
I hear you. I really feel like I used to be so afraid to say it out loud, but my friend Jamie said to me the other day, like, share your optimism. I just really feel right now like I'm in this shift of just like things are happening and I'm allowing them to happen and I'm happy to share it and I'm excited. And I do. I really feel like I'm entering into a new chapter of my life.
I want to clap right now. I think it will sound bad, but I'm really happy to hear that. That's awesome. Such a great place to be in.
It's a hard place. It was very hard. I always dreamed about getting to that place. But
what do you
really
think helped you get here?
I did a lot of work on myself the past couple of years. I really, really deeply looked within emotionally, spiritually, and it was done through like therapy, through life coaches, through Kundalini yoga, books, inspirational books that I've read, mantras, crystals. Like,
do you have a mantra?
I have a couple, but I have a specific one that I say that's a couple of sentences long that I obviously have memorized now that's hanging in my closet. And it's to paraphrase, it's really just about my visions as a wife, a mother, and an actress. And that just sort of affirming that I deserve these visions and I deserve this dream and that they will manifest. And it's more like when I look at vision boards, it doesn't have to be exactly what I'm putting on the board, but it's the feeling that those pictures give me and however the universe wants to deliver to me the opportunity to feel that way, I welcome it. I used to be such a stickler that it had to be this way or that way, and it doesn't anymore. I think I have to look sort of beyond what I think will be great.
That's a really good point. Sometimes it's just the essence of the thing or how you internalize it that's more important than knowing exactly what that thing is.
Exactly.
I read that you were a perfectionist as a kid. Mm-hmm. Are you still a perfectionist?
Better at not being. You know, what I find is so funny, and many people that I've met with MS over the past year and a half, we're all perfectionists and kind of have issues with control. And isn't it funny that we're all given this disease that takes away perfection and takes away a lot of our control, like control over your own body. So I think it's a pretty crazy but great lesson in sort of surrender and the power that lies within that. So I think, you know, MS has kind of taught me to sort of chill out a little bit with the control.
That leads to my next question, and maybe it is the answer, but toughest lesson you've had to learn to this point in your life?
Yeah. Not being perfect is actually better, and it's okay. I remember a director once told me, like, Jamie, don't let him see you sweat. And I remember I sat back in my trailer after he said that, and I thought, I think that's really bad advice, because I think it's really noble to ask for help. I mean, and you'd be surprised at when people want to help. And life is terribly lonely if you feel like you've got to do it all on your own. And so being vulnerable and open and being okay with not being able to do things on my own all the time. I mean, I was forced to have to be that way, but it's okay. I mean, my friends and my family and my coworkers enjoy helping me to be the best that I can be. And I think that MS is my thing, but everybody has something, you know, and people should give themselves permission to ask for help, I think.
Well said. Completely agree. Okay, ask everybody this question. Worst advice. You, especially in your role, probably have gotten a lot of bad advice.
Yeah.
Like the don't sweat it advice is some really bad advice.
I would say the don't sweat it, because that used to be what I think the way I used to think I had to live for a long time. And again, I think it really just hurt me. It was very isolating and kind of just, it causes a lot of stress and frustration, because there's a lot of things you just can't do on your own. So I think like not letting them see you sweat is kind of bad advice.
Jamie Lynn, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. This was great.
Thanks so much for listening to another episode of No Limits. If you like what you heard, please make sure to leave us a review. It really does help get the word out. And don't forget, you can follow along with us behind the scenes on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat at Rebecca Jarvis. Special thanks to the team here at ABC that helps make this happen. Taylor Dunn, Josh Cohan, Andrew Kelb, Michelle Bancardo, Steve Jones, Annie Osakwe, and Elizabeth Hecht. And join me next Tuesday for an all-new episode of No Limits with Rebecca Jarvis. Until then, take care, be well.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table.
What is happening here?
It's just beautiful chaos.
every day right after the show while the topics are still hot. The ladies go deeper into the moments that make The View, The View.
To be honest, I was thinking about asking him for a foot massage, and then I just froze.
This is the best gig on TV.
And you know, anything can happen.
That is what we do here.
I'm not going to lie, the chair's a little small for my behind.
The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.